to woo or not to woo?
Yes.
That is the question. Twigs, thank you so much for taking a break from whatever it is that's going on downstairs.
We're sewing our own dresses.
So something nerdy.
Yes, for a Jane Austen event.
Okay, we should sewing. And meanwhile, as we're up here, I guess I should set the stage a little bit. The echo you hear is movie Aristotle's dining room. Or are we in the kitchen, technically? Okay, we're in the dining room, kitchen area in, can I say where, approximately? Can I say what state we're in? We're in Wisconsin. Okay, so that's the echo you hear. And
Originally, it was a sewing day for the girls to make our dresses for the Jane Austen event.
The girls being my wife and Mel and Tali
and
movie Aristotle's sister. Does she have a screen name?
Four Signs Repeat.
Okay. And are all Jane Austen nerdy people and are making dresses. And I came along and Ryan did too. Ryan is into Wonder Woman and Avatar and other things, but not so much Jane Austen. So we just kind of came along and have been chilling up here. And but anyway, thank you for stepping away for a moment to, you know, mingle with the Narnia Web reading group again.
You're welcome.
So, yes, we're doing another Narnia Web Silver Chair reading group podcast again, which I haven't done in a while. Sorry, we got distracted with other stuff, I guess. But
you got distracted with other stuff.
I got distracted with other stuff. Okay, you weren't going to let me go on that one.
Nope.
We'll try to do some more of these soon. But I should mention this is going to be posted on October 16th, which is Narnia Day. That was created by the Twitter account Narnia Series. You can just tweet them at Narnia Series. So today, October 16th, is Narnia Day, and I won't say why. Those of you who are truly in the know, Narnia fans, will know why October 16th is Narnia Day. Or you could just Google Narnia October 16th, or probably someone has mentioned it in the comments, I would imagine. But what is Narnia Day? Well, I guess you just tweet something about Narnia. Oh, sorry. Specifically, I've got it right here. You're supposed to tweet or on social media, wherever you want it to be. Let's see. Celebrate by using the hashtag Narnia Day and explain how much Narnia means to you and how you discovered it. Hashtag Narnia Day. Post something on social media and maybe we can get this on the actual calendar one of these days. You never know. Give it a
never
try.
Know. There are so many days out there.
Okay, so the Silver Chair Reading Group is still happening, but
yes.
All the chapters are posted, yes?
All of the chapters are posted, yes.
Yep. So go to narniweb.com, click on Forum, then Silver Chair Reading Group. We're dissecting every bit of the book, somewhat, you know, in anticipation of the movie. And each chapter has a series of discussion questions that Twigs and I created. And well, that sounds really fancy. We created the questions. We didn't just write them. We created the questions.
We created them.
We're in the credits. So we're going to answer about five of those today and read some of our favorite posts. I think I told you I wanted you to write the outline for this one. Something to do with me being really tired and not having time, but really it was so that people who don't get their posts read, they can blame you, not me.
Oh, well,
so just yes. Know that if we don't read your post, it's because Twigs read it and hated it. Something like that. Not actually, probably.
No.
Okay, so we're going to read questions from chapters 3 and 4 today. And I'll give, even though I'm sure you all read the book, let's still give a little bit of context to make it flow. Let me take a look at what our first question is so I can, thank you. Well, we're actually reading this on physical paper today. It's kind of like a web page, but printed on the back of a dead tree. Really primitive here, but it'll get the job done.
I prefer paper because I can move it around a lot easier than my laptop.
Physical media. See, I'm always in favor of physical media, except when I move. Then it's, gosh, put these on a hard drive. I may actually look at even though I have a physical copy of the Silver Chair in front of me, I may be looking at the digital version as well. So, I don't know. Would love to be a purist about physical media, but I'm just too practical, I guess. I'm dreadfully practical, like the White Witch. I'm sure Jadis loves her her tablets and her I'm blanking on the ebook reader thing.
Kindle Nook.
Yes, I'm sure she's got a whole pocket full of that stuff. Okay, so when we last left our heroes, Jill, and Eustace. They're in Narnia, of course, and Eustace almost died. What? And then got blown to Narnia. Jill was given the four signs, and then she lands in Narnia and sees Eustace and thinks, wow, how terribly wet I am. I think it's when we saw her at the end of chapter two.
That sounds right.
Yep. So we're going to be going into what you guys in the forum wrote about these chapters and probably talk a little bit about how they could approach this stuff in the upcoming movie. And yes, I do think it's going to happen, even though every month or so we get a, this just in, folks, we're going to make the silver chair. Then, you know, a month later, this just in, we're going to make a fourth Chronicles of Narnia movie. I still think it's happening. These things take time. We're in the early, early development stages. So
I'm very much in an I'll believe it when I see it mindset.
Well, it's just, I don't know, like, I think a lot of people, I mean, I've done this so many times, like following a movie since, like, even before they have a screenwriter. I get it, that it just takes time sometimes.
Well, then I came in with the Narnia ones much later in the process. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was, like, sporadically, like, I'd get email updates about Prince Caspian, but obviously, I think it was probably already filming by then.
Uh-huh.
And then I joined the forum before Don Treader, but that was, once again, much closer, I think, to when they were actually starting the filming and that stuff. So it's like this basic beginning thing, yeah. I have no precedent for.
Yeah, this is really essentially a beginning of a new series, which Mark Gordon actually called it the next Narnia series recently. So it takes longer to develop something from the ground up than something like a sequel. So now the start of chapter three, and Jill and Eustace meet Glimfeather, which I think brings us to the first question we're going to look at.
Yeah. How do you feel about Glimfeather often ending sentences with, ooh, funny, cheesy?
So to rephrase that question, to woo or not to woo?
Yes.
That is the question. So I think to woo. What post do we choose to highlight from there? What are Narnie Webbers saying about Glimfeather's wooing?
Yeah, and there was some that were like, well, it's cheesy. Eustace said he finds them hilarious.
Any screen names and give shout outs to?
That was Eustace.
Oh, actually Eustace.
Okay. Yes, Eustace, the screen name.
Screen name Eustace, not Eustace.
Not the character. The character has not commented that I know
Eustace,
about.
Actually, Eustace is actually in the forum. That'd be awesome. But okay, we'll settle for screen name Eustace.
Yeah. The Rose Tree Dryad says that I think it's fun and clever, but it also makes me glad that he's not a main character. We get really old after a while.
Glimfeather, a Narnia story. If we can get an eighth Narnia book with Glimfeather as the main character and dealing with things like nabbing bats and trying to be awake in the middle of the night and, you know, really riveting drama like that. So, yeah, presumably, or maybe we can get a dark surprise, Glimfeather and his niece. Like, I don't know.
No.
So, no, probably doesn't have what it takes to be a main character.
Reepicheep 775. It's not crazy about it, but he wouldn't call it cheesy either. It said it's pleasant, I guess. Raidian conceptually likes the idea, she said, but
the idea of ending sentences with kind of the ooh sound.
The idea of, since it helps with the idea that talking beasts in this world aren't just humans and animals' bodies. But she wasn't impressed by how other adaptations have done it.
Yeah, we're let me just to kind of make it clear what we're talking about here. Let me pull out my copy of The Silver Chair when they first meet Glimfeather. And let's see, the first time they see him coming along here. The owl lands and says, to woo, who are you two? And they talk to Scrub for a while, and the owl says, too true, said the owl, sadly, shaking its big head. But who are you? There's something magic about you two. I saw you arrive. You flew. Everyone else was so busy seeing the king off that nobody knew except me. I happened to notice you. You flew. So I think when you read it in the book, what I like about it is you don't necessarily notice it right away. It takes you maybe a paragraph or so to catch on. Oh, I get it. Ooh, like an owl. But it's in an adaptation, like an audio drama or a movie, it is a little more hard to be, maybe they feel the need to kind of make a bigger point of it than it should. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I like it the way that, I mean, I don't remember any problems within the BBC version.
Okay. Ta-wo!
Anyway.
Poking at Twiggs's beloved BBC versions, as I will tend to do.
Yes, you will. And nice sound there, too. but as Lewis wrote it, it's great. And it's it really makes it feel kind of owlish. I know in like the next chapter, kind of discussing like, well, how are they going to identify or adapt the flashback? And if they have an owl narrate it, well, that's going to get really old if they put all the twos in.
If so, I'm sure David McGee spent a lot of time on Google. Things that rhyme with ooh.
But I mean, I don't remember in the book per se, but I think in the BBC version, I'm pretty sure that once the owl starts narrating the story,
yeah, they don't do it,
which makes sense because this could be like a more colloquial way of talking. But if you're presenting a story, if you're talking in a more formal way, you're going to put it in more standardized.
And there's only so many English ways to tell a whole story that long. A brilliant backstory with every sentence ending with ooh, probably somewhat limiting.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that there is a, I see it as like the to woo. I see that as this Lewis trying to tell me what you think of this. I don't literally think of Glimmer this saying to woo. He's just approximating a sound that owls make. Like in a book, you might write the dog went bark, bark, bark. But if I did the movie of that, I wouldn't just have the dog going bark, 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 bark. So I think with adaptations, like the focus on the family radio drama and Warwick Davis, they just go to woo, and I think that is cheesy, and I think the ooh thing could be fine in the movie as long as it's something that is not made a big thing of, and it's like, oh, that's a kind of a unique way they talk, and like Radiant said, oh, I get it, they're owls, they're not just humans that look, you know, that's people within, you know, animal bodies, so I think it's fine as long as they don't make a big deal out of it.
I don't know, just do it the way Lewis wrote it.
That's what they should do.
Just do it as Lewis wrote it, and I'll be happy.
Yep, I guess that sums up. Okay, it sums up your opinions. We can end the podcast right now.
Perfect.
Just do the book.
Yep, that pretty much covers it.
All right, what do we got next?
All right. Scrub says, finding Caspian in his 80s is worse than coming back and finding him dead. Do you think this is how you would feel?
So Scrub comes back. Yeah, I saw a number of people didn't seem to think so.
No.
In the reading group. Once again, NarniWeb.com forum, reading group. Just go there if you want to. Or I'm sure I'll have a link in the podcast description. I think I get it. I think Scrub comes back. He assumes that he's going to see Caspian the way he saw him, an old friend. And he gets back and to find him an old man, I think is really, there is something about it that's really like, physically expecting to see Caspian in his prime and then seeing old frail Caspian and also a hopeless Caspian who thinks he's about to die without an heir. I think I can really, I think for him personally, I can understand him feeling like it'd almost be better if we'd come back 200 years and he was dead and everybody was gone. Kind of like the Pevensies did in Prince Caspian. Yeah.
I didn't really know much about what to think for that one. It was kind of, I don't know, because it'd be really hard to come back and find them all dead, too.
Sure.
But then the Pevensies did it do just fine. But as I was reading through people's answers, I thought movie Aristotle had a really great one. He wrote, have you ever had a friend get married? Well, you don't even have a sweetheart. Or maybe your friends have a house already or even kids, but you're still living with your parents. Even under normal conditions, it is hard to see a friend enter a different stage of life than you because they are experiencing or have experienced things that you are still looking forward to or only dreaming about. Imagine how much worse it must be to come back a year later to find your best friend very old, his life almost spent. So,
thanks, movie Aristotle. Great post. He's sitting right over there. Isn't that just how technology works these days? Sitting right over there, but we'll communicate. Just listen to the podcast in a couple days, and then you can post a comment responding to it, okay? Anyway.
And that really, like, oh, I get it now. That, like, really, it connected so I could actually more so put myself in Eustace's shoes. Because, I mean, anybody can kind of relate to that. And it really, like, oh, I get it. Yeah, that must have been really rough for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's totally, it fits into the setting up the despair that Narni feels at the very beginning, that Eustace, he remembers the old Caspian, or rather the young Caspian,
mm-hmm.
and comes back and sees his frail Caspian, and Eustace remembers him the way he used to be. And this is a Narni that's without hope. That's the most important thing, you know, that Lewis, I think, emphasizes at the very beginning of the book, is that Experiment House, totally without hope. Even the teachers and the headmaster are corrupt and can't help. Then you go to Narnia. They're past the point of even being able to fight and stand up. It's like, that's it. We've already lost. The king is about to die without an heir, and that's just the way it is. And so I think, I do think it's, because we don't know it's Caspian until, like, we find out the same time as Eustace, don't we?
Yes, we do.
So we just see an old man. We don't know who it is. And we don't know, because Aslan didn't say Caspian, right? He just said it was a king. Yeah, so we don't know it's Caspian. So I think I remember feeling the same thing. When I just thought it was this old king, and oh, that's Caspian. Like, I thought maybe we would actually see Caspian in this book, and he would be a character and would, you know, play a major part. Oh no, he's just an old man. I think I do connect with kind of how disturbing and disheartening that is, and think it's really, really effective. On to the next.
Why does it never occur to Jill to simply write down the signs?
Yeah, I brought up that one some years ago, and no one else seems to quite relate to it. Once that occurred to me, I was like, why don't you just write them down? And it seems like everyone else is like, well, I don't know, whatever. She's too busy or doesn't have a pen and paper. I don't know, whatever. But to me, it seems like one of those fairy tale logic things that you just hope people won't think about. And obviously the theme of the whole point of it is that Jill has to remember and trust and rely on them and say them to herself all the time. But I don't know. Anyway, has that ever bothered you at all?
No.
You see, this is what I'm talking about.
Aslan told her to memorize them, and memorize them she did. And I think it makes more sense to have them memorized, because then they're more ready for easy reference. You know, not that she referenced them. I mean, maybe she would have done better writing them down, but it makes more sense to me to have them memorized and internalized as opposed to on an external thing.
I just wonder if that's something that the movie especially will worry about, is audience asking that question. If they try to make more of a point of showing why she's not doing that. I do think the signs in general, though overall, could work better in the movie than in the book. Because as readers, we can cheat. We can flip back to chapter 2 and we can read what the signs were.
Yes.
The characters can't do that. So a movie might actually work better, where we can't, in a theater at least, we can't just rewind and go watch that part.
No.
So it might actually, if they just don't spend too much time on, like, actually rush through the signs part a little bit so you don't have too much time to really commit it to memory, it might actually work better in a movie.
Yeah, it might.
Really?
Of course.
The purist admits it.
It might strengthen Lewis's point more in a movie.
Exactly. There you go. Okay.
That is not something that they would have to necessarily change to make it.
It's just inherent to the medium they're in. Yeah.
Basically, you know, from the practical, she probably doesn't carry paper and pencil. She probably didn't need him at Experiment House unless she needed to draw a map of how she was going to escape or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or that she was too busy type stuff.
That's the sense we get, I guess, is obviously she was very busy and Jill is easily distracted. That's one of the important parts of the book, is that she should be focusing on this, and she's easily distracted by hot baths at Harfang's, or in this case, you know, fancy dinners in Cair Pervel and other things.
Yeah.
All right, so you ready for the next one?
We can go on to the next one.
Well, really quick, let's pause for about a minute for our C.S. Lewis Minute. We'll be right back.
I'm William O'Flaherty. This is a C.S. Lewis Minute. What book of the Bible did C.S. Lewis read more than any other? If you're familiar with most of the works of Lewis, it will come as no surprise that he enjoyed the Book of Psalms in the Bible. It was the one he read most often. In fact, his only work devoted to a biblical book was on the Psalms. With a title like Reflections on the Psalms, it's clear the volume is not intended to be an exhaustive study. Those who are used to his reasoned arguments in defense of Christianity could be surprised at the content. Lewis opens his book with the sentence, quote, "This is not a work of scholarship." He also notes he writes as one amateur to another on the subject, stressing his main purpose is to present his own reflections for others to consider. Thus, his aim is helping a person better enjoy the Psalms. Learn more about C.S. Lewis by visiting my website, EssentialCSLewis.com.
And we're back. All right. Next question.
All right. Let's see. I think we're into the next. Yes. Next chapter now. Chapter 4.
Okay. Parliament of Owls.
Yes. At the Parliament of Owls, when Scrubs says, "But surely Caspian would let us go when he knew who I was and who sent me," Jill puts in, "sent both of us." Why does Jill feel the need to add this?
So Scrub says, "Oh, Aslan sent us, or sent me." And then Jill interrupts, "sent both of us," and really feels the need to emphasize because she feels like she's being left out, I guess.
Wagga Werewolf 27. And Aslan explained to Jill that she and Eustace would not have called to Aslan if Aslan hadn't also been called to them. And it was Jill who had to learn about the signs.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was both of them. I just think it's, it is something you see a number of times in the book where Jill feels like she's being left out. Even when she's being blown along, she's being blown to Narnia, and she says something like, "Oh, I wonder if anyone's ever slept on air before. Oh, darn it, Scrub probably has." And then she gets the knife, right? And she just gets a knife, and Scrub gets Puddleglum's second best bow or something like that.
Something like that, yes.
And that happens several times throughout the story. And I think Jill feels like she's at a disadvantage because Eustace has so much more experience here and knows so many more things than she does. What's the bit where I'm sure we'll talk about in the next book discussion one or reading group discussion, but you know, Eustace says Marshwiggle as if he was rather proud of knowing the word. And I always felt like, I don't think that's the narrator saying that. I think it's Jill thinking to herself, he seems really proud of knowing it. And of course I don't know it because I don't know what's going on here as much.
See, I think that's the narrator because that's classic Eustace.
So you think he actually was rather proud?
Oh, yeah.
Possibly was proud when he says Marshwiggle. But I think because we see this so many times throughout the book, we see Jill feeling a little insecure about the fact that this is her first time in Narnia. And there's a bit of a rivalry with her and Scrub. I think there's
I would say that there is a bit of a rivalry, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she's completely insecure and stuff, and you can have rivalry without insecurity, I think.
Right.
But going back to the question we're actually discussing.
Sorry, spoilers. Reading group spoilers.
It's a mild one. The Rose Tree Dryad says she's being a bit childish, but I can understand where she's coming from. That Eustace seems to be taking control of the situation since he knows quite a bit more about Narnia than she does. And perhaps by extension, ownership of the mission. Jill probably likes the idea of being on an important mission. It's, in parentheses, it's self-esteem building stuff. And then, and doesn't want him to hog the glory. So there's a lot of thoughts that Jill just is fighting for recognition, feels like she's ignored, feels like she's left out. I kind of lean towards more, it's probably human nature. If you put, you know, here he's saying us, and then the next sentence he's cutting her out.
Mm-hmm.
Or then, like, not even the next sentence, it's all part of the same sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and no matter how silly things are, people like to make sure that others know that there were a little bit of recognition.
Right. That. Okay.
Covers that question.
All right. On to our next question then.
All right. "I have lost my queen and my son. Shall I lose my friend also? This heartbreaking flashback with Caspian and Drinian is not essential to the narrative. It could easily be removed. Why do you think Lewis chose to include it?"
So what did Narnie Weber say when they were challenged with, what if they cut out this scene?
Well, the Rose Tree Dryad said from an emotional standpoint, how it is heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's also heartening. So she said, if you remove that part of the narrative, the ending is somewhat is something like, and the king was very sad because his queen was dead and his son disappeared. With this ending, however, not only do you get a much more dramatic last act to the story, there's also some comfort in knowing that Caspian still had a close friend despite his incredible grief.
Mm-hmm.
And that the evil plans of the lion, oh, no, of the lady of the green
evil
kirtle,
plans of the lion.
No, I started going to a wrong abbreviation there. Weren't so complete that our friendship was destroyed and another life was lost.
Yeah, it's just, it's such a powerful scene. You know, Drinian comes back and basically tells Caspian it was basically my fault because I didn't tell you about the woman that I'd seen with the prince. And Caspian, for a moment, is so angry it's going to kill him, and then stops and says, you know, "Lost." What's the exact quote there? I've lost my queen
and my son. Shall I lose my friend also?
And it's such a powerful scene. And one of the problems with it could so easily cut it out. You don't need it. And I imagine in a movie, this being just absolutely in danger of being cut or just being mentioned and rushed through. But this is, I know we'll talk about kind of the challenge of the backstory in a second. One of the problems with getting all this backstory in there is that, like, that scene right there, it's not just, oh, by the way, this happened. It's a genuinely emotional scene. And it totally, I think, feeds into the despair that Narnia is in. I think we all, that's such an emotional scene. I think it just really sets the tone really well. And it's not just enough to mention that it happened. We have to really see it as an actual scene and really feel it.
Yes.
So that's my concern with a lot of things with the Silver Chair backstory, that they'll just mention they happened. This is not just a thing Lewis mentions. We really, really feel this. This is a real moment.
Yes. Most people seem to think that it, at least even if it wasn't necessarily essential, that it did carry an emotional charge that was needed or added a lot to the story.
Yeah, by not being essential, I just mean you could take it out, and it's not
right,
like there'd be some, it's not like there'd be something glaringly missing, but it absolutely achieves something. So I'd like to see them. There's so many things in about the Silverchair backstory that, wow, it in a movie that really could kind of overburden the story and be too complicated in a movie. But it's like, no, you can't take that out. Now we're turning Narnia into something generic instead of embracing things that make it special.
Yeah. See, I don't understand why they can't just go into the backstory and do it, you know, maybe similarly to how the BBC did. Or, I mean, The Lord of the Rings was always like doing flashbacks to the history of the ring and everything, and seemed to work fine there. So
mm-hmm.
I think just do it is my opinion. But
so I guess the issue here, Lord of the Rings did flashbacks in a really effective way. But I mean, Lord of the Rings also, they did cut a lot of things out of the books.
Well, yes, they did.
Yeah, I mean, Lord of the Rings is, you know, it's a 9-hour movie, and it's dense. There's a lot of material in every single scene. I just think for something like this, I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying it's one of those things where can we really spend a lot of time on these characters we're going to say goodbye to in the very next scene? And I mean, Lord of the Rings did cut out characters like, say, Glorfindel or Tom Bombadil or a lot of the early hobbits because, well, like, do we really want to include and spend in this movie that's already so overstuffed and overpacked with stuff and details, and people that don't know the books are like, well, they're just trying to keep up. And so I think this might be a case where we don't need this to further the story. It doesn't mean it's not valuable, but I think it is at risk of getting cut. I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm saying it's a challenge to get it in there and make it organic.
It wouldn't be, I mean, The Lord of the Rings managed to get, like, Isildur's little part of the story in there, which is, I would say, I mean, you could easily do that through, like, dialogue. Oh, yeah, Isildur cut the finger. He was, you know, but they actually took the time to show Isildur doing it, and I mean, it would be
because they had the big flashback at the beginning, the prologue,
or
at the beginning,
where the flashbacks, wherever it was, and like sometimes you would get different pieces of the story, different honor.
Yeah,
it's been a while since I watched them, but it's like they cast actors to
I think doing it that way in The Silver Chair wouldn't do the scene justice, because like we're seeing Even the way they do Isildur cutting the ring off Sauron's finger in Lord of the Rings, it's done in a way of, it's a prologue. There's a narrator telling us what happened, and then we're kind of seeing images. I think that wouldn't really do, if that's their approach to this, like imagine they have a narrator telling us what's happened, and then Caspian and Drinian, you know, had this really emotional moment or whatever. And then we just see a shot of them hugging or whatever. I don't think that would do the scene justice. With Isildur, it really is, we just need the plot point. You know, we don't necessarily need, we just need to know that it happened and see that it happened. But I think this is something where if you're going to do this scene, you need to let it breathe and let it be a real scene where, okay, we've gotten to know Caspian a little bit. We've gotten to know Drinian a little bit. And now this is a big emotional moment then. That takes a lot of time. And that's spending a lot of time on characters that are going to vanish from the narrative shortly. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but Dave McGee's got his work cut out for him, I think, in order to keep that scene in the movie. I think it's really tricky. I hope I'm wrong. David McGee, I hope he can figure something out.
I'm probably more easily pleased and more, I mean, I didn't have time to completely rewatch the BBC Silver Chair, so I specifically watched parts I knew we were going to be discussing.
We got to have our debate soon about that.
Yes.
As she sighs and shakes her head.
Well, I'll need to refresh my memory again. Uh-huh. But as I wanted to see specifically like how the BBC did that scene and...
Ugh.
Sorry. I don't know. See, and I like...
It's just not nearly as powerful as what's in the book. It's just Caspian just kind of pulls out a sword a second and is like, never mind the tug. That's my memory of it, basically. But anyway...
Like I said, I'm more easily pleased. Yeah.
I think, you know, as fans, we come at the adaptations from different perspectives. I think I just want to see a good movie. And I think you just want to see a visualization of the book, basically.
Yeah,
and
pretty much.
I mean, if you're looking for a version of the story that where like all the, you know, the book exists and will not disappear once they make the movie. Like the version of the story you want, it's right here in my hands right now. I'll even let you borrow it if you need another copy. Actually, this is Movie Aristotle's version, so I have to ask permission first. But to me, it's like, well, just I've already got the book. It's not going to change. What I want now is a good movie. And that's the first priority. If it's exactly like the book in that event to event and line for line, but I don't really enjoy it as a movie, well, what was the point? You'd made an inferior version of the story. Why make it at all? We have the story right here. And also, I just love movies, and so I just want a good movie.
Yeah, and I'm much more of a bookworm than a moviegoer.
Yeah, you just want the satisfaction of seeing, you know, actual actors and actual sets and kind of, try to bring it to life.
Yeah.
I get that too.
It'll be very interesting when it finally does come out.
Uh-huh.
And we can discuss it.
Yes, which we will. I would imagine so. Okay, what's next? We spent a lot of time. Is that the last question?
Yep, that was the last question.
Oh my, so is it time?
It is time.
So let's stump a Narnie Weber, or let's try to at least do your worst. I'm getting stumped today.
All right.
But if you're listening and you have a trivia question you want to submit, just email podcast@narnieweb.com with stump in the title. Please include the question, but not the answer. So Twigs, do your worst.
All right. Well, I'm not sure if it's necessarily my worst, but how many names does Aslan have?
How many names does Aslan have?
And if you need a reference to where
let's see if I can knock. So how many names does Aslan have? I mean, obviously Aslan, Son of the Great Emperor Beyond the Sea. I can think of that one. I mean, they call him the Great Lion. I could count them out. How many names does Aslan have? Wait a minute. There's a part where he says, but where does he say that? I think there's a part where he says he has, I think there's a bit where he says he has 9 names, but I can't remember where he says that. Maybe in the last battle somewhere? I think since the question specifically asking, like how many, I think, all right, I'm just going to say, Aslan, even though I can only count like 3 or 4, I seem to recall something about him saying he has 9 names. So I'm going to go with Aslan has 9 names. Final answer.
You're correct.
Yeah, okay. That was somewhere between yes and okay. Okay. What's the reference on that?
Silver Chair. The centaurs are talking to Jill and Eustace while they're taking them to see Rillian at the castle.
Cool. Okay. So that's like almost near the end then of
yes.
the book. Cool.
Yes.
Woo. Okay. I feel I was really had to go on a journey, but I got there. That question, by the way, was submitted by the Narnia Nana. She's a huge fan of the podcast, and I am a huge fan of her as well. Thanks, everyone, for posting in the Narnia or in the Silver Chair reading group. If you haven't posted there, why not? Why are you missing out on the party?
Exactly. Get over there, please.
Yep. Go to all the threads are still open. Go to narniweb.com, click on forum, and then Silver Chair reading group, or you can just click on the handy link I'll have in the description of the podcast. Don't forget, October 16th is Narnia Day. So just post something on social media or just think quietly to yourself, wow, Narnia is great. You could do that too. but just post something on Twitter, hashtag Narnia Day. And you can tag at Narnia Series. That's the Twitter account that started it. By the way, Narnia Web is also on Facebook and Twitter. So give us a shout out there. You're supposed to post how you discover Narnia and what it means to you. You could also post that in the comment section below. And while you're at it, why don't you post how you discovered the podcast and just generally where you listen to the podcast. And do you listen to it all in one chunk or do you listen to it in sections? I'm just curious. Any feedback or ideas you have for us for possible future topics? And also what superhero movie Twig should watch next? That's always an ongoing thing. I think since we put that out there, someone actually recommended Spider-Man. Which I was thinking about and which you ended up watching. What do you think of Spider-Man?
I like Spider-Man.
Okay. So again, for those of you that didn't hear, Twigs hasn't seen like any superhero movies or really a lot of movies in general.
Well, yes.
but anyway, so we're starting with superhero movies. And so now you've seen which ones?
Let's see. Well, if you count the Adam West Batman movie, I've seen that one. Seen The Incredibles.
Okay.
I saw Wonder Woman.
The Joe Johnston one.
Yeah, Captain America and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. And Superman.
Oh, Superman. I knew I was missing one.
Yeah. So which one should we watch next? How do you introduce someone to the superhero movie? If you want to add that into the comments as well. Twigs, thank you for moderating and doing your moderator thing.
You're welcome.
Ruling with an iron fist when necessary. No.